Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Charlie Baker.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily. It was lovely. It was me and Andy today.
It was.
We had a bit of a chat, didn't we, Andy?
We did.
All sorts of stuff came up.
Yeah.
You went in on Chelsea.
A little bit. I thought I was very reasonable, really.
Very reasonable. We chatted chess.
We did.
A delicate chess conversation.
Amazing story, yeah. Which you may well have read about, but some good insight from Leon Watson there.
Yeah, Leon Watson joined us. Martin Kellner, squad number 9, looked at the sport on TV. The Figo documentary was particularly interested. We'll hear about that. And Jonathan Overend joined us to chat. Roger Federer and tried to turn Andy onto tennis. Let's find out if he did. Here it all is. Andy.
Charlie, that was possibly the worst opening I've ever done. Well,
I did write it in about 2 seconds, about
well,
5 minutes ago. So, you know,
it would help if I read it first.
There we are. A lot of people tune into this show, Andy, mainly for your reaction to Chelsea results.
Yes.
How do you feel about Graham Potter's first game in charge?
Well, I'm tempted to say meet the new boss, same as the old boss, but I think there were some good signs. Mount, I thought, put in a lot better shift than he'd been putting in, but he's soon going to. It's a big job this for him. There's no question. He's got to do. I think it's a bit like Arteta when he came in. He's got to sort this squad out because for me, this is the worst Chelsea squad for 20 years. There's no
really
question.
20 years.
Yeah, where's the Cheks, the Drogbas, the Terrys, the Lampards? You know, these sort of players.
Yeah.
There's not that sort of spine of the team, and you know, you've got players like Havertz. How many managers will Kai Havertz cost their job in his career? Because he's one of those players that you look at him and think, what a fantastic player this bloke is.
Yeah.
You pick him and he's hopeless. I mean, that the other night was absolutely typical Havertz. He starts off with a couple of nice touches. Then one goes wrong, confidence completely drops, and then for the rest of the game he's either hiding or not doing anything, and then he gets taken off.
Well, someone like Graham Potter, they always say, is a great man manager. You know, maybe he's the manager to get the best out of him and it stay the best by giving him that confidence.
And I've written down here, Aubameyang now knows how Lukaku feels playing for a team that doesn't create any chances. But that's not actually true. I mean, that game the other night, there were some good signs, there were. And you've got to give the guy, it's going to take him time. But I've seen that game about 15 times in the last 18 months, say, 12 to 18 months, where at the Bridge, where Chelsea drop a lot of points. And, and it's always the same game. It's get the lead, then sit back, then the other team you can see the other team score, and then you create 5 or 6 fantastic chances, which you don't take, and it finishes 1-1. The number of 1-1s they've been. And it was just the same. And so, you know, you think to yourself, really, he's going to discover quite quickly which of the squad he can trust. I was a bit, some of the selection was a bit odd, I thought. I did think, couldn't really see. I mean, if you play Silva and Thiago Silva rather than Aspilicueta together in a Premier League game, you will lose that match, in my view. So, you know, there we go. But it was.
And was that reaction shared by all? You were there, weren't you? You were there.
I couldn't make it. I'm going to the Milan game. I couldn't work out the website and I failed to get tickets, which is annoying. But I've got them for the next 2 Champions League games. But they've got it all to do in that competition. And, you know, if you consider that's going to be difficult to qualify, but they can still do it, but they could fail to qualify. They could be out of the Carabao Cup if they don't beat Man City away, which is, you know, quite a difficult game.
Yeah. But they are beatable. They are drawable. They could beat them on pens.
Haaland, if he has a night off, you never know.
They might not play him in the Carabao.
And in the league, the top 4, well, that's looking a bit tricky. So
They won't play Haaland in the Carabao, surely.
I don't think they will. But, you know, against Chelsea, they might. It was interesting last night. I watched a bit of the West Ham game. I feel a bit for West Ham in this Conference League because it's probably strong enough to win it, but all you get is you get back in the Europa League.
Yeah. But it's a trophy, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is. I did enjoy Carlton Cole, though, calling Craig Dawson. I never realised this was his nickname. Obviously, they called him this in the dressing room. Ballon Dawson.
Oh, nice.
That's clever, isn't it?
That's very good. That's a nice one.
And I was pleased for Ivan Toney. I was very pleased to see him in the team. Yeah. I was advocating it. And they were highlighting his penalty record today, and it's 18 out of 18, which is fantastic. But you know what's going to happen? You absolutely know. You'll get to the World Cup.
Yeah.
A massive penalty.
Well, I don't know that, because he does seem to me to be a very confident player,
very
who doesn't seem scared by any level.
No,
you know,
I don't think so. But you know, taking a penalty for England in the World Cup isn't quite the same as taking a penalty for Brentford at any point. But you know, we'll see what happens.
Because you see him regularly, don't you? Because you have a Brentford season ticket.
Yeah, I'm going on Sunday to the Arsenal game. That should be good.
And is he a different level to everyone else in the team when he
No,
plays?
He's not a different level to everyone. You know, but he's definitely good enough to play for England. He's good enough to be in the squad. It's a good decision. Last night during the commentary, Rob Hawthorn, the commentator, mentioned the Danish team, Aarhus. Whenever I hear that name, I can't help going, Aarhus is a very, very fine hoose.
Yes,
you have to, don't you?
Or in the middle of our street.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's that one as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's about it.
Oh,
really.
Great. Mm. And with Chelsea, what do you think Potter brings different? How do you expect him to change the team?
Slowly. It's difficult, you know. I mean, personally, I felt that it was a very strange transfer window, because they spent 280 million, but they were worse after the window closed than they were before.
Yeah.
And that's never a good thing. And, you know, players like, you know, whatever you thought of Werner, and I was critical of his finishing, but he stretched teams and he created stuff. So Werner and Hudson-Odoi went out and they kept Pulisic and Ziyech. I would have done exactly the opposite of that. Pulisic is a legend in his dad's mind and his mind, and hasn't done anything for about 2 years. And Ziyech,
you'd have shipped him out.
You know, I don't blame the fans. I mean, they were critical of the commentary team about giving him a hard time. And of course, it never helps if you get on a player's back. It doesn't. They're never going to play well if you do that. But you can understand why the fans did, because they consider he was one of those that cost Tuchel his job.
Yeah.
You know, and if Graham Potter keeps picking him, it'll be the same thing. Because there's a good player there, but not for a couple of seasons. So
ninth you were hoping for, weren't you? You were saying before the show you were thinking about ninth, mid-table.
We'll see. It's a long way to go yet. Long time to go. There's been a kind of levelling up in the Premier League, you know, that is amazing. I mean, you looked at West Ham last night, their bench, they were able to bring off the bench Bowen, Suchek, and who was the other one? Benrahma. You know, they could never have done that before. No. And when you've got teams, you know, the first 10, 12 teams in the Premier League are all, apart from City, you know, they all can beat each other. They've all got great
squads. Well, I think that's what Liverpool have found. I don't think they've strengthened enough, and I think they've been caught out this season
It looks mental there. But they played. That was a good point for them, good win for them the other night, which they needed, of course. So that's
lovely. I was reading a thing last night, Andy. I mean, I'm 5'8". How tall are you, Andy?
I am 5'6".
5'6".
On a good day.
Happy in your 5'6"? You seem like a happy person.
Well, you know, look.
Do you think it's ever affected your life negatively?
There's a great rap song by Skilo called I Wish It Was A Little Bit Taller.
Yeah, yeah.
I want that played at my funeral, to be really honest. And so, yeah, any short person would like a few extra inches, but there is a limit to what you'd go through for it. And in the end, you have to accept what you are.
I think tall people have height in place of a personality a lot of the time. I think that's what I want to say.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that's what happens a lot of the time. They wear their height like they've achieved something, when they're actually only just
only
been
shorter
born.
People
genetics.
Would think that.
But I was reading an interview with a guy last night who's been and had his legs lengthened.
Yeah,
this is now a process you can have.
You're talking
surgically lengthened. Would you consider that?
No, absolutely
not for you.
No, absolutely not. All the risks involved, you definitely wouldn't do that. I'm happy with the way I am.
No, I don't. I mean, maybe if I was playing at the back, if I was a defender, I'm just a very good midfielder.
Yeah, but that wouldn't help
you.
That wouldn't help your footballing ability, would it?
Yeah, a year out having your legs lengthened.
No, I don't think so.
Imagine what it's like when you turn up and you're suddenly 6'2".
Yeah, well, you know, be good, but
you've been 5'9".
Not going to happen, is it? Really?
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Do you have anybody on Twitter who pretends to be you? Do you have a fake Charlie Baker?
The actual Charlie Baker is the governor of Massachusetts.
Yeah, on Twitter. To be you, does
he doesn't pretend to be me. I don't think he knows I exist at all. But he often gets tagged in on non-league banter.
He would do, yeah. Yes, the bloke's just tweeted us, and he's not happy that I was talking about Chelsea. Manchester United fan, but sure. Fair enough. But he's quoted this Twitter handle. It's not me. I'm not on Twitter. So if you do follow at Andy Jacobs.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
19. It isn't me. You can follow him if you like, but it isn't me.
Maybe we should get him on, see what he thinks about Chelsea.
Now, I don't know if you've seen this new England kit is out. And
It doesn't look real, Andy, in my view. It looks like a sort of...
Oh, yeah, because it's been leaked.
Looks like a market knockoff.
Yeah, it's not the official. It's a leaked version. We don't know whether often these things are quite accurate, though, when they do leak it. But it's always the same. It doesn't matter what the kit is. It's always the same reaction. People don't like it, and people think it's too expensive. Yeah. Unless they brought out an absolutely pure white one that looked like
Bobby Charlton was
wearing it, and one from 1966, people will go, well, we don't want this.
But why don't they do that, being out a pure white one?
Well, why don't they? I mean, why don't they stick with tradition? It's a very, very good point.
Why do we have blue on the kit, Andy? Do you know? Is there a reason we have blue on the kit?
No idea.
No, I don't know. I don't know why it is. I don't know, because it's not in the England flag, is it, blue?
No.
So if anybody knows, they can let us know. You know, there we are. I don't like it. From what I've seen so far, I don't like it. That's it. Boom, hammer comes down.
Talking of colour, I don't know if you saw the pictures of Harry Styles wearing the other day.
I love what he wears.
Oh, he's
you're a fashion man, Andy. Yes, you know all about fashion.
Emerald green is marvellous, isn't it?
Yes. And,
Lindsay Grice of Manchester wrote to The Sun. She's not happy about it. I don't know what kind of statement Harry Styles is trying to make, but his recent fashion choices, such as green blazer with a leafy corsage and matching handbag, screams attention-seeking to me. Of course, writing a letter to a national newspaper, that isn't attention-seeking, of course. Well done.
But it's high fashion, isn't it? And you always see high fashion on the catwalks, and you go, oh, well, I'm never going to... Look at these idiots. Never going to end up wearing that. And then, of course, in about 2 years' time, we'll end up wearing a version of that.
I can't see me wearing an emerald green jacket, but you never know.
I can see you in it. Why not? He had his collar out, didn't he? When he was talking about that last week.
The very,
but
very
he only
long...
had one collar out. Was that on purpose?
Very possibly.
Just one collar out becomes... Matter.
If you're fashionable, you can do what you like, and people go, oh, it's meant to be like
it's
that.
It's meant to be like fashion, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, no, yeah. We talked about that last week because I had a similar shirt. And,
yes, and then you met someone who you thought, but it's actually David Frost.
It was, and John did brilliantly finding the picture.
The picture, I remember that, yes.
Emma Raducanu in action again yesterday.
Yes.
And I know it's surprising, it was a second round defeat, and she got a thigh injury. But no.
I think you're very cruel about Emma Raducanu. She's won the US Open, we have to give her that. I don't think you luckily do that, do you?
No, you don't.
So I wonder what's going wrong. Why did she drop the coach that she won
I have no idea.
She won the US Open with, and then has since never sort of done anything since. I don't really understand.
You do need a coach, don't you, really? For these things.
You do indeed.
You're going to be on House of Games next week.
I am, House of Games next week.
I presume you've already recorded it.
It's already recorded a long time ago, actually.
We won't expect you to get any spoilers.
No spoilers, but it will be on daily. It will be on daily next week, Monday to Friday. So it's me, Val McDermid, Martin Afire, and the singer, Rebecca Lucy Taylor, who's better known as Self Esteem. Right. I don't know if you've seen her this summer. She's been around on all the things.
Oh.
So Self Esteem, she's a big music artist. Very, very good. Martin Afire was a nice chap.
Oh, yes. He used to live in Chiswick. I used to see him around a lot. And he said, brilliant player.
He did at one point say, there's been no rugby league questions. I said, well, to be honest, Martin, if there were any rugby league questions, the answer would probably be Martin Afire.
That's very true.
Just
when you do a thing like that, is it good for business? I mean, does it help the sort
We'll find out.
Oh, I see.
We'll find out, won't we, Andy? We'll see. Right. People come and see 24-hour pasty people, Mike Tor.
And, of course, you're on with Max tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow morning.
And Omid Jalili put a photo up today. He's in Melbourne. And he had a coffee with Max and paid him a tremendous compliment, to which Max then said, I had to pay for that compliment. He had to pay for the coffee.
Yeah, there we are.
I mean, it has travelled halfway across the world to see you.
You've got grandchildren, haven't you, Andy? Did you ever watch the programme Bluey? That's an Australian programme.
I haven't seen it. I know. Is it about a kangaroo?
No, it's about Australian dogs, Australian dog family. And it's
it based on real life.
I don't know if it's a cartoon. And Bluey is the daughter, and her dad is sort of, he's a bit annoying because he's like super dad. Like, he's always got time to play with them. He's never hungover. He's always sort of like super into the game, like commits fully to it, never checking his phone. You know, I'm not saying this is my parenting technique, but you know, he's perfect, never like
the perfect dad. They don't exist.
Absolutely perfect dad. Anyway, there's an episode where they go to a kid's party. Right. I don't know if you've ever had to take your grandchildren to, I'm sure you took your kids to kids' parties.
And, sure.
And Pass the Parcel comes up. Mm. And I think this is an excellent episode. Because in the Pass the Parcel in Bluey, there's not a prize every time.
Oh, right.
Because these days when you do Pass the Parcel,
there's no losers. In modern life, there's no losers.
And that's the point it's making. But then as it goes on, the kids start to enjoy. Each party then has the rules that there's no, and they start to get it and they start to enjoy winning more.
It's interesting.
Do you think it's a big problem with kids these days, Andy? I don't think we're talk radio. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know. But I do remember when we played Pass the Parcel, it was just the one prize.
Yes.
It was quite exciting if you won it, and you didn't really want an extra prize every layer. But, you know,
I think it's a better way to play Pass the Parcel. I'm interested in people's... I'm interested in people, if anyone wants to tell us 81089, there's kids' party disasters. We could take some of those. I think we can take some of those this afternoon. 81089, let us know your kids' party disasters. Because we tried it at my daughter's sixth birthday party, and we did get a lot of tears and have to start handing out bags of sweets. Because they're not used to losing.
Very interesting. Yesterday I was at a function and I spoke to a guy who's a Talk Sport listener, a very nice man, and... his son-in-law plays on the PGA Tour in America.
Right, yeah.
Very interesting.
That's high level.
And we were talking about Liv and the PGA Tour, and it was interesting to see Greg Norman ripping into the PGA Tour, according to some say, saying Liv have abandoned any hopes of a peace deal. And I'm not surprised, because judging by what this chap had said to me, the feeling in the locker room is really bad. You know, there is a real resentment.
Well, on the two sides.
Well, I think the fact that basically these guys have gone off, that's one thing, to go off and earn that money, fine, that's your decision.
Mm-hmm.
But then to think they can come back, it's feeling like double dipping to these players. And you can totally understand that. And I'm not impressed with Greg Norman at all, really, but there you go.
But they seem to have so much money that it will just become the norm, and then they'll have to give
it
to
it. It might
that's
do.
How I
mean,
think it'll work.
He thinks that he should know that there are four companies who want to broadcast this tour, because at the moment it's only available for free on YouTube. Because I don't think the established golf networks were particularly interested. But we'll see what happens. Personally, for me, I'm not interested. But there you go.
Maybe like the Pass the Parcel, they should just have a prize on every hole on the golf. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they probably will. They probably do.
Just that if you get your ball in the lee shots, the bottom of the hole is a big gold bar. And they pull out the gold bar. It'd be lovely on the Live Tour, wouldn't it? There we are.
Why not?
Very, very nice. The England colours are blue and white because the team represents the English FA, whose colours are blue and white. There we are. That's right. Philip on the Scottish borders. Them. Thank you very much for telling us that.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Charlie Baker and Andy Jacobs with you through until 4 o'clock. I was telling you earlier about the episode of Bluey.
Yes.
Andy, where they have to pass the parcel when they have a prize. And I was asking for children's party disasters. We've had one here, my daughter's sixth birthday, coincided with me re-shingling the roof of an outbuilding. I spent the morning putting all the rubbish from the roof into black sacks and then went to the... You can see where this is going. Then went to daughter's party where all the presents were in black sacks.
Oh.
The next day, I asked my wife if our daughter had opened her presents yet. We realised with horror, just as we saw the back of the dust van disappearing up the road, that I'd put all the gifts out with the rubbish. I had to phone all the parents, find out what they bought, replace and wrap the gifts for the door. God, he's nice. Did a nice job.
Yeah.
Daughter to open. And she still doesn't know to this day what happened. Let's hope she's not a TalkSport listener.
What?
But if she is, you're very...
Let's hope no one's listening. Marvellous.
Speaking of no one, joining us next is Martin Kellner, squad number 9. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, Charlie. Good afternoon, Andy. You're both all right?
Yeah, yes, very well. Martin, thank you. Yeah. Very good. Well. You're back with extra time, 1 a.m. till 6 a.m.
Indeed. I've got some sport on TV for you. I mean, the first thing that I watched was a thing called The Figo Affair.
Oh, yeah.
The transfer that changed football. Well, it didn't. It didn't change football at all. It changed Real Madrid for a while, but it certainly didn't change football. And it's really not like the streaming services to overhype the stuff they have. But there you are. It's a fairly disreputable story. I don't know how much the two of you remember of this back in 2000.
I remember the pig's head. Was that featuring?
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like going from Spurs to Arsenal. You know, I mean, there's a whole political context to this, which we don't see over here. But the... It starts with Luis Figo himself telling the story, or as somebody says, he's speaking his truth. This is a new concept. You speak your truth, which is not necessarily the truth.
But that's always the way, isn't it? There's your truth, their truth, and the truth. You know, that's that old saying, isn't it, really?
Precisely.
When people speak their truth in an open letter. I don't know what other sort of letter that you have other than an open letter.
That's a good point. Anyway, he sits there speaking his truth. Obviously, they do the clapperboard thing first. But really, it's at the end of the... I mean, it's an interesting story. It's a great story because it sort of indicates how devoted fans can become to one player, and especially with this, you know, the sort of toxic split, if you like, between Barcelona and Real Madrid for historical purposes and everything. And Figo was an absolute hero. It was Figo mania. Maybe the transfer wouldn't have been quite as quite as toxic if he hadn't been so disparaging of Real Madrid when he was actually playing for Barcelona. There's a great scene where he's on a balcony there and he's had his hair dyed in Barcelona colours. Mm. And it's after Barca have won the championship, La Liga. And he's saying, bow down before us, crybabies of Real Madrid. And then, of course, he gets transferred. But there's a lot of finagling in this. And I think what makes it completely different from a transfer that we might see over here is the roles of the presidents. You know, this is something we're not familiar with, but, you know, the presidential battles to become president of Real Madrid or president of Barcelona. Mm. And these guys, you know, who become the presidents, they're at a sort of level of egotism, which we, you know, even, I don't know, name anybody, Todd Bowley, whatever, we're not at that level over here, or even in America. I mean, once you give someone the title of El Presidente, they're going to behave like, you know, El Presidente. And either the hero or the villain of this piece is Florentino Perez, who basically, in a presidential election for the boss of Real Madrid, promised them that he would bring Luis Figo, which he did. And he managed to do it. Luis Figo, to some extent, was a little bit sort of easily swayed and quite weak about this because, you know, he did want to stay at Barcelona, sort of deep down. Obviously, money was a key issue.
Sure.
You know, as a lot of footballers say, he didn't feel valued. He didn't feel valued at Barcelona, which I think is basically a financial issue, isn't it, really?
He was a terrific player, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, fantastic player.
Yeah.
Fantastic player.
And you recommend it, do you, Martin?
Oh, it's a decent documentary, yeah. It's well worth watching. But like I said, the title oversells it, The Transfer That Changed Football.
Yeah.
I mean, it changed Real Madrid because they get Florentino Perez. He promised he'd bring Figo. There's a great scene where the previous president, Lorenzo Sanz, who was more of a sort of father figure, his daughter's getting married, and all this finagling's going on while it's the wedding. You know, it's a bit like a scene from The Godfather. While the wedding of his daughter's going on, Florentino Perez and various people, you know, who are campaigning for him to become president, they're doing this while his daughter's getting married.
Mm.
Paulo Futre is an interesting figure in this because he made a load of money out of this transfer. West Ham legend, not quite, but
yes.
Paulo Futre, who was part of that wacky Harry Redknapp transfer policy around about 96, where he bought Dumitrescu and Radicchio and Paulo Futre, who's he'd had a lot of injuries. Somebody did put on a West Ham website that the Paulo Futre medical is one of the great mysteries of modern science. You know, that his bones were about as resilient as a bag of Quavers, basically. But anyway, he played a couple of games for West Ham. I think he had one really good game. But he got €1.5 million euros out of this deal simply by talking to Figo, because obviously Futre was sort of like a Portuguese legend, as Figo himself was, and smoothed over the deal. So it was a lot of... nobody comes out with any credit from this, really. You know, these sort of presidential figures. Florentino Perez smokes quite a lot. He also struck me as a bit like... If you've ever seen a Pedro Almodovar film,
mm-hmm.
he'd be the guy that would play the sort of smoothie adulterer. Really, I mean, I'm not saying that he does, but that's the sort of part he'd play. But no, you know, as I say, nobody comes out with any great credit, least of all Luis Figo, who I suppose he deserted Barcelona. But I mean, he was still a great performer for Real Madrid as well.
It is a bit like Harry Kane signing for Arsenal. That was a bit of a shock. We should move on there because we want to cover some other programmes.
I've
got this on my plan. I haven't got around to watching it yet, but I've heard it's really good. Football Dreams, the Academy.
Oh, is this the Crystal Palace one? Is it? Oh, yeah.
This is the Crystal Palace Academy. I mean, I'll tell you what's disappointing me about this. It was I've been watching this, you know, following the story, really. But in episode 6 of it, which is the final, it's a 6-episode series on Channel 4. And in episode 6... it sort of abandons the story. I mean, I suppose they don't want to see people being disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
There may be an issue with, you know, with parents and family and that sort of thing. But, you know that it's very, very hard to make it. And in episode 5, which I really enjoyed, there were 3 centre-backs, Leon, Pete and Kamal. And they were fighting for 2 places, really, in the team. I don't know how many, probably only 1 scholarship you were talking about, but, you know, they were competing, and there was one of these kids that had a real growth spurt, and obviously that had affected his play, you know, because he was a centre-back, and now I suppose his centre of gravity had moved, etc., etc. And you got to know the parents and all that, but when we got to episode 6... it was more of a PR exercise for the Crystal Palace Academy. You know, it was, for instance, they showed a scene of Gareth Southgate, who was a youngster at Crystal Palace. Obviously, it wasn't the academy then, as it is now. But it seemed to be a very glossy one, just showing you, and it showed you Teo, who was a lad with Nigerian parents, and he'd done very well, and he'd played a game, I think, in the FA Cup and everything, and had got this pro contract. But it did seem a little bit dishonest to me to show all these, all the competitiveness and the ruthlessness and the hard graft that it takes to be a football player, and all the character elements of it. Very, very important, you know. And you do get that impression from hearing the coaches that, you know, the character element is as important as anything else. You know, you have to put up with the disappointment of maybe being dropped down to a lower age bracket, and there's all that sort of stuff in episode 5. But in episode 6, this was all it was all brushed over, really. And it was very much a PR exercise, I think, for the Crystal Palace Academy. What I didn't know was that a lot of players go to 2, 3, or 4 academies before they're taken on. So, you know, the disappointment when you're dropped from an academy may not be the last disappointment that you face, because Eze was on the show, and he was saying, you know, he was at 3 different academies, and he sort of stressed what a long road it was, and what hard graft it was. And then behind it all, you've got to remember they're still kids.
Yeah.
You know, they're
It's sort
kids.
Of panning for gold, isn't it? It always feels like that to me. Like they're
very
just
much so.
Sort of just try and find one. All they need is one, you know, and then it pays for the rest of them. It's I mean, it's, I don't know.
It's a ruthless business. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that the thing you did find out from it was that, you know, a lot of, as far as the pastoral side of it, a lot of care is now put into that at the Crystal Palace Academy. But as I say, it was a bit of a PR exercise. But I assume the same applies to other academies as well. And the blow is softened as much as it can be. But you hear from one or two of these kids saying, you know, I've got no plan B. You know, these kids said, I've got no plan B. Mostly from, you know, fairly poor upbringings. Bless them, some of these kids, you know, they just wanted to move their parents out, or their mother in most cases, out of the area they were in, you know, which was a poor area with drug dealing, etc., etc. So it was a great human drama for the first 5 episodes. Episode 6, maybe inevitably, because they didn't want to show you the disappointment for kids, but episode 6 sort of tailed off and became more of a PR exercise, I thought.
Quick one on bad sport on Netflix.
Juventus, yeah.
This is, yes, if you've not had enough of sort of corruption and double dealing in the the Luis Figo one.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
You'll know the case, 2006 in Rome, where the here's another character from a Pedro Almodovar film. The guy who was in charge, Luciano Moggi, he was called Moggi. He was the director of football at Juventus, and influenced referees. I mean, in a big way. He phoned up and made sure that there was one match which Juventus were facing the team the next week, and two guys were, if they got another booking, they were banned. And both players, mysteriously, were booked in this match after a phone call from this guy, who eventually went to prison, actually, Luciano Moggi. But, if you like, I mean, there's so much true crime on the streaming services. If you like your true crime crossed with a bit of Italian football, you'll enjoy this. Okay. The bad sports series is pretty good. There are quite a few of these. But this one about Juventus is a cracker. If you can't follow all the ins and outs, Gab Marcotti's on it and explains a lot of it, and he's very good.
Brilliant.
At that.
Always good, isn't he?
Okay, Martin.
Martin, you're very good. Thank you very much for joining us.
Tonight,
you're back tonight, are you? Extra time, 1 till 6.
1 till 6, yes.
There we are, lovely stuff. Thanks for joining us, Martin. Martin Kellner there, squad number 9 there, with all the sport on TV from the last week.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Charlie Baker and Andy Jacobs. Now, intrigue has rocked the world of chess. It's been rocked by the biggest scandal in years. And it involves artificial intelligence and, let's just say, a method of communication, Andy. And that's as far as we'll go with that.
Is it proven, though? I think the whole thing is up in the air. Basically, the world champion,
Magnus Carlsen.
Was defeated by an opponent, and he didn't accept it, and a lot of people thought it was fair enough, but a lot of people are saying, well, there was some skullduggery.
Yeah, let's go with skullduggery. Leon Watson, chess journalist, joins us now. Good afternoon, Leon.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Is this the first time you've experienced this type of chat in chess?
Yes. I mean, I've covered the game for many years, but this is the first time I've dealt with this specific allegation. Yes. I mean, we've had some odd ones in the past. We've had poisoned yogurts, and we've had we've had radar beams zapped into players allegedly. This particular one, I've not heard before.
No. Yeah, we're not going to talk about what the particular one is. People can Google it if they, but do be careful when you Google it. Magnus Carlsen, I mean, how much of a shock is it that he did lose?
Well, he lost this game. It was in the Sinkfield Cup, which is a fairly big tournament, worth about $500,000. He lost this sort of upstart American guy called Hans Niemann, who's a very talented junior. I think he's 19 at the moment. And he inflicted this defeat on Carlsen, which is a bit of a shock. And Carlsen didn't take it very well, as he doesn't take defeats very well generally, which is no surprise. He's a top sportsman. But the next day he turned up for the next round, for round following, and it was announced that he wasn't gonna play. And then he posted this. On Twitter a tweet saying, using a clip of
Jose Mourinho. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then that set everything ablaze. Set everyone else wondering why. And it was sort of almost universally assumed that he meant Niemann had cheated, essentially. Yeah. And but then the question arose: how could Niemann have possibly have cheated? And what transpired was a number of theories, various ideas, ranging from the slightly plausible to the completely implausible. And one of them in particular has hit the headlines and gone all the way around the world and given chess, this wonderful austere game that I love, some headlines, which is brilliant news in a way, but the sort of circumstances of it are a bit strange. The idea is that he must have cheated in some way. He must have smuggled some kind of electronic device in. If the allegations of cheating are true, of course, cheating is a very serious allegation in chess, just like it is in any other sport. It's like doping in calling someone a doper in the Tour de France.
Sure, or something like that. Sure. I mean, the chess world seems to be split over this, though. Anatoly Karpov, the former world champion, said, I watched the game and have to say that Carlsen just played extremely badly. I reject all accounts of an unfair win. Whereas Hikaru Nakamura, the world's number one blitz player, said that he felt that Magnus Carlsen would never have tweeted this. He would never have behaved like this if he didn't really believe that something had gone wrong.
Yeah, they've all piled in, all the big grandmasters. They've all got a view, and I mean, Nakamura is particularly outspoken. He's accused Hans almost of cheating, pretty much straight up. And of course, it's a serious allegation. But and then there've been people defending Hans also. I mean, it's a big scandal in itself. I mean, Carlsen essentially withdrew from this tournament, which is akin to Federer or Djokovic just walking out of the US Open or Wimbledon, on round three. And it's something that hasn't happened for about 50 years. And it's never happened. Carlsen's never done it in his career. And so in itself, it was a big scandal. And then it took on this life of its own. And with all these theories about how it was possible to cheat over the books, the chess players are under a lot of scrutiny. They have to go through metal detectors just to get into the venue. They're not allowed to have any electronic equipment on them, just in case messages can be passed to them.
Yeah.
What the best moves might be, for example.
How in the past have not this specific case, but how in the past have they cheated? How do you cheat at chess?
Well, there's this guy called Igor Rausis, who was famously caught a couple of years ago. And he had been sneaking off. He'd hid a mobile phone in a toilet, in the cistern, and he snuck off to the toilet, and then just got on his phone and used his phone to find what the next move he should make, because obviously computers now, you can use them on your phone and
that seems pretty basic.
If you've got to do that, it's not really worth playing, is it? It's so interesting with chess, though. Since the Queen's Gambit, it's really given chess a sort of new popularity, isn't it? Probably a new audience. It was such a fascinating program for the non-chess player. I don't know what you thought of it, but it certainly awakened my interest in the sport.
Yeah, it was great. It was quite a good depiction of what it's like to be a top level elite chess player, the stresses and the strains and the sacrifices that you have to make. I enjoyed it, and I think generally it was very well received within the kind of chess community as being quite an accurate depiction, because there've been plenty of other ones that haven't been accurate. But the Queen's Gambit was great, and I suppose if you watch that, you can sort of understand, you know, what it takes to get to the very top, and you know, it, much like cycling, you know, people sometimes try and find shortcuts. Mm. I mean, Hans actually admitted to cheating online in online games, which is a different arena. Mm.
Yeah.
And that kind of has sort of reopened the debate a bit, and that has sort of blackened his name, if you like. It's stained what some people think about him, and they doubt his defence now because of he admitted to that, but you know, my view is he was very open with that, and he was happy to talk about it, and he said, no, look, I may have cheated, you know, when I was 16-17, but that's nothing to do with me cheating against the world champion. And
presumably, I mean, you can only get away with this once. I mean, if he isn't a great player, which he, you know, or a really top player, this will come out, won't it, eventually? I mean, you can't do this in every game, in every tournament. You've got to show that you are pretty decent.
Yeah, no, people are analysing his games going back years now to try and work out whether he has cheated. But yes, if the mud sticks, his career is over if it is proven. But it's very difficult to prove these kind of things. You know, you don't have blood tests or urine tests for this kind of stuff. You have to go back over the games and analyze them in a way that shows without doubt that they've had assistance. They couldn't possibly have come up with these moves. And that's, there's always an element of subjectivity there, which you know, with a urine test, you either pass it or you fail it, and that is the problem. But I mean, he's a very talented teen. He's a very sort of wild, kind of outspoken guy, very colourful character in chess. And he has this kind of wild hair going on, and his interviews are very, very bizarre. But he's also extremely talented. He's the sort of he's a top US player, top US youth player, and he's always like his dream is to become world champion. And he's annoyed a lot of people. He shows Carlsen. He's one of the few players who shows Carlsen just no respect. It's like you know, someone rocking up and just messing with Roger Federer. You know,
using Rafa Nadal's bottles.
What of Carlsen now? Because that was a run of 53 games without defeat in the long form of the game. Presumably, there's another tournament or another big event coming up. But, He'll show up. I mean,
they're about to play on Monday in the Julius Baer Generation Cup, which is another big tournament for a lot of money, and all eyes will be on that to see what happens. I mean, you know, Neiman will be interviewed and he'll be asked all about it during that. He's been turning down interviews last couple of days, but the matter will have to kind of come to a head there, and it'll have to. There'll have to be some kind of explanation also from Carlsen, because Carlsen has intimated that he made everyone believe that that he's accusing Neiman of cheating, but then he hasn't said anything for the last week or two. He's just gone completely silent on social media, which is unlike him. He's usually very active, and so people are wanting an explanation from him.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Yes, you're listening to Baker and Jacobs on TalkSport in partnership with EE, full fibre broadband that can handle anything. Limited availability, check coverage at ee.co.uk. Now, I don't know if you saw yesterday, Andy, that Roger Federer retired. Sorry, you were going to say something?
I was, but it doesn't matter. I'll come back to it. No, I'll come back to it. We'll carry on with this.
We'll come back to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roger Federer retired yesterday. I think one of the greatest of all-time players, if not the greatest all-time male tennis player. I will say that for me, Serena is the greatest of all-time tennis player. And joining us now to discuss this is Jonathan Overend, a tennis journalist. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
The greatest of all time in your mind, Jonathan?
Well, I think it's a really interesting debate, isn't it? And you're right to point out that Serena obviously has the most the most slams among the era's men and women. But in the men's game, who'd have thought that Federer would actually finish third on the all-time statistical list? Because you've got Nadal with 22, Djokovic with 21, and Federer's 120. So, you know, you'd never have thought that when Federer was mopping up in the mid-2000s. You know, he was untouchable in those years, kind of 2004 to 2009. And he was streaking clear of Sampras, and Nadal was really only just getting on the scene at that point, and we barely heard of Djokovic. So to think that Federer should only be third on the list of all-time greats if you actually stack up the numbers. But this is where I think the debate needs a bit more nuance, because if you've seen Federer live, and I don't know if you two gents have ever had that privilege, but he's just so magnificent to watch. It's impossible to be against him when you're there just a couple of yards away, because he's I mean, I don't know if this is sort of like too, I don't know, just coming at it with my Sunday Times culture supplement or anything like that, but he's so aesthetically pleasing as a tennis player. Do you know what I'm getting? He just glides, doesn't he?
It's
difficult for me.
It's the balletic movement. It's the poetic way he goes about constructing a point. And for me personally, I think that has to count for something when you're assessing one versus another. You know, we're in this sort of data-driven, stat-heavy age in sport, and I completely understand that. But I think you've got to take other things into account, and that's why I think many, if not most tennis fans, would regard Federer as the greatest player, just simply because he was so great to watch.
I'm so unqualified to talk about this because I don't like tennis. And I can't think I've ever even watched a game of him play. I used to like his blazers, though, when he won the Wimbledon. That was always good. But I suppose it's unusual to have, you know, three great players around at the same time, and then you can throw in Murray, I suppose, into the mix.
Yeah, well, they pushed each other, Andy, didn't they? And I mean, Federer said that in his statement yesterday, that, you know, without Nadal, Federer wouldn't have had to have taken his game to a new level. And then without Djokovic, Nadal probably wouldn't still be going at the age he is now. And you're absolutely right. Murray has to be in that mix. Sure, he didn't win anywhere near as many slams as the other three, but he's been very much public in saying that they all made me a better player, and I'd much rather have played in that era and become as good a player as I could possibly have been than, say, be number one and mopped up in an era when he didn't have any rivals. But I agree with you about the blazer. And remember, he came on centre court one year with a cricket V-neck jumper, perfectly monogrammed in the early days of the RF logo. Make no mistake, as well as being a top player, this was a guy who loved that sort of showmanship element as well. A raging ego in a good way, because he got the commercial side of it. He got sport. He got the way the whole game operated, and he knew that part of that was promoting himself and his own brand.
Didn't he used to get a cow every time he won? Is that right? Am I going mad?
That was his first Wimbledon. When he won Wimbledon in 2003 for the first time, he went to Gstaad in the Swiss mountains, and that was his reward, a Swiss cow.
Oh, maybe he's lovely. Maybe that's why he's retired. He's got a herd now. He can retire now.
Well, he's got a herd of kids.
Do you think having Nadal and Djokovic around you, especially for Nadal, who's so dominant on the clay and is, you know, unstoppable on the clay, do you think that just drags him up to a different level as well, so he never became complacent?
Yeah, totally. Because before Nadal, the main rivals for Federer on the tour were the Aussie Leighton Hewitt and the American Andy Roddick, who were both top players, but Federer had their number, to be honest. He beat Roddick in several Wimbledon finals, and he wiped the floor with Hewitt at the US Open one year, I remember, with two love sets, 2004, I think that was. But then this kid from Spain came along, Nadal. And yeah, we've always known him as the king of clay. But one of the things Nadal did very early was set out his intention to win Wimbledon, to conquer those other surfaces. Mm. And I think, wow, what ambition that was at a time when Federer was so dominant, to actually say, one day I want to win this title. And they met in the Wimbledon final of 2006. I think that was Federer in four sets. Then again in the Wimbledon final of 2007, and that was Federer in five sets. And we're following a little trend here. Yeah. 2008 was that classic final, which ended in the dark at about 9:30 at night, and it was won by Nadal. So that was the moment when Nadal got the better of Federer on the grass. It was such a significant moment. And I think you're absolutely right. It was that moment that maybe made Federer realize, okay, I've got a decade now of a pretty serious rival, not just on the clay, but on all surfaces. And it took their games to new levels for sure.
Now, Great Britain are in action at the moment, and Andy Murray was playing last night in the Davis Cup, and it's made all the papers this morning. He's not delighted about how late it finished, and apparently all the crowd had gone.
Yeah, they played the USA in Glasgow. The match didn't start till 4 o'clock. There were a couple of singles matches that went all the way, and then there was a doubles, which finished at 1 o'clock in the morning. I think, that, in fairness, there was about half left. But tennis has this extraordinary ability to shoot itself in the foot sometimes, you know, by scheduling a session that doesn't finish until the early hours. And we saw it at the US Open as well. I mean, how Alcaraz, the young Spaniard, won that title, having finished at like 3 o'clock in the morning one day and 2:30 in the morning the next day. It's a peculiar sport, Andy, in the sense that every match is how long's a piece of string. You know, you cannot give a definitive answer into how long this tennis match is going to be. So we could say, schedule it no later than 7 o'clock, for example, but it might still be going at midnight. So it is tricky. But you've got it, particularly for kids who are maybe getting their taste of Andy Murray this weekend in Glasgow. You can't be asking them to still be sitting around at 1 o'clock in the morning and missing the last bus home, can you? So it's definitely something the sport needs to look at.
You've got to blame Nadal, I'd say. You think bouncing the ball before he serves about 1,000 times.
It does seem a bit of a misstep, because they do seem to have sorted out the Davis Cup format, don't they? Which was forever and winding for a while, and now they've seemed to have slimmed it down a bit and all taking place at one time. So it does seem a slight misstep.
Yeah, and of course Britain won it a few years ago, so kind of that was a great day in Belgium, and Murray won his part. But yeah, I'm a bit confused by where the Davis Cup is these days in terms of the thinking. Because the great thing about international tennis is so many nations compete. It is a truly global sport, you know, like football. It's hard to think of another sport beyond football and tennis, which are competed in practically every nation in the world. So what the Davis Cup does is it gives all those nations the chance to play internationally, sell some tickets, raise a bit of money for the federation, and hopefully develop the sport in that particular region. But I can see why they've tried to sort of put more focus on the elite nations and the finals at the end of each year. And certainly for Glasgow at the moment, great opportunity to see some tennis, because as we all know, there aren't too many opportunities in Britain around the year to see tennis and see these stars up close. So, you know, I hope they sort out the scheduling, and a great opportunity this weekend to see some tennis there at the Emirates Arena.
Just a quick one back to Roger Federer again. Jonathan, do you think he'll be coaching? Will he be broadcasting? Will he go into the media? What do you think he'll end up doing?
So here's the thing about Roger Federer, Charlie. He can do anything he turns his hand to, and particularly in the sport of tennis. I mean, I've seen him behind the scenes where he runs the show. You know, he's the boss. Mm-hmm. He could do any job and A, understand it, and B, be able to do it. He's just got a handle on the politics, on the commercial side. I mean, the deals he's done over the years have been astronomical. He gets the media side of it as well. I don't know what I can't see him as a coach, if I'm really honest, because that is such a grind when you've done it already for so many years as a player on the tour. You've basically got to do it, you know, in someone else's pocket, the same thing, and just not get paid as much. So I can't see him doing that. But will he run his own tournament in the future? I would say probably. Will he do some media work? Probably. Could he be a future boss of the men's tour? Yeah, probably. Could he be a future Wimbledon chairman? You know, all these sorts of roles. There's no doubt that Roger Federer could do them if he wanted to.
Jonathan, you've been so good. You've even made Andy interested in tennis for this last 10 minutes.
We'll get you to Wimbledon at some point, Andy. One day.
I've been. It's a very nice day out. The strawberries were lovely.
Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Hey, Jonathan Overend.
I see Roger in broadcasting. In fact, apparently he's taking over from you. It's Max Rushton and Roger Federer.
Oh, well, good luck to him. He doesn't sweat, apparently, unlike me, sweaty old Charlie Baker.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. Thanks very much. I'm back tomorrow morning with Max Rushton, 9 till 11 for the game day warm-up. And you're back Tuesday, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm back Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday I'll see you, or I'll speak to you down the line on the birthday spread.
Lovely stuff. There we are.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.